The ways of Zion do mourn, and she is in bitterness. All her people sigh and hang down their heads to the ground. An uplifting start to Live and Local today here on FM 90.9. The show's your connection to local performances. Good afternoon. I'm Kevin Kelly. That is almost the opening music after the initial instrumental sinfonia from the funeral anthem for Queen Caroline by George Frederick Handel, a piece that is, I think fair to say, not terribly often performed, but is going to be performed in its entirety by the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock in Champaign. And we'll be hearing more about that and the other music on the program from music director Chester Alwis. Coming up later in the program, we will welcome conductor Paul Vermel, who is formerly of the University of Illinois faculty and making a return as conductor of Offenbach's Orpheus in the Underworld, which what is now known as Lyric Theater at Illinois, formerly known as the University of Illinois Opera Program, is presenting Thursday through Sunday at the Krannert Center in Urbana. So that is coming up somewhere around 4:30. Hope you'll stick around for that. But first, welcome back to Chet Alwis. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having me back.
So I was accurate, I assume. I think you were nodding your head when I said this piece not terribly often performed.
No, I've never heard it performed live.
And there's in the promotional spot for mm-hmm. today's show, I introduced the whole, the idea of Handel and the choral works by saying that since the Baroque artist founding in 1996, you've made a point of exploring lots of Handel's music, in particular the big oratorios mm-hmm. like Messiah, of course, but also Israel and Egypt. And I mentioned that one strategically because there's a connection between that and
there
this
certainly
piece.
Is. That was very astute of you.
Oh, terribly. Well, it's about the only thing I know about this piece other than that he wrote it for a queen of whom Handel was rather fond.
Yes, yeah.
So what's the connection?
Okay, the historical connection is that Queen Caroline, the wife of George II, the king for whom Handel wrote the coronation anthems in 1727, 10 years later, end of November 1737, died. And she and Handel, as you mentioned, were close friends, I think it's fair to say. And he wanted to honor her. And so in remarkably short time, even for him. People know that he wrote the Messiah in 24 days or 23 days or whatever it is. He cooked up a 45-minute long anthem for her funeral in Westminster Abbey that took place in early December. And it is a pastiche, as Handel often is, of many different pieces drawn from various places and composers and even himself. It was such an occasional piece. I mean, if one writes a funeral anthem for a monarch, you can't very well reprise it in that form. But Handel liked the music so well, and I think justifiably so, that he wanted to find another way to use it. And so when he conceived of Israel and Egypt, he basically rewrote the text of the funeral anthem for Queen Caroline and made it an elegy on the death of King Joseph, he of the coat of many colors, who was the king of Egypt at the time when the Israelites came down there before they were in bondage. So that made a way of using the piece and then setting up the whole Exodus story coming out of its prehistory.
And Israel and Egypt, the Baroque artist did how long ago now?
We did it as the first of those whirlwind concerts. I think it was the spring of 2002 following 9/11.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take your word for it because I remember that it happened. And,
yes.
And beyond that, don't know.
But we didn't do this as the first part.
No, I understand.
Yep.
This is termed an anthem.
Yes.
And usually, I would say most of us who have ever gone to church and heard a choir, when one talks about an anthem, you think, oh, a couple, 3-4 minute piece that is sung maybe at the offering time. Mm-hmm, this mm-hmm. is not exactly that kind of anthem.
No. It comes out of Handel's very astute veneration for Purcell. And in the 17th century, in the restoration of the monarchy under Charles II, they revived the anthems from the Elizabethan period that had been put on hold and on the shelf by Oliver Cromwell. And the anthem essentially in England is the same thing or equivalent to a cantata in Germany. That is a multi-movement work, typically with solo and chorus and orchestra. That can have a unified text that might be either from one, like an entire psalm, which is the case in the Chandos anthems we'll talk about later. So it is an anthem in that sense.
This one, the texts come from, well, the one we just heard comes from Lamentations of Jeremiah, and I see several others from there.
All biblical texts.
But you said that he actually borrows some of the music from other composers.
The chorus, fugal chorus, She Put on Righteousness, I think it is a keyboard fugue. That was organ fugue written by Johann Philipp Krieger, a German composer who predated Handel. And Handel did the same thing in Israel and Egypt. A number of the choruses in Israel and Egypt, especially in the plagues, are essentially keyboard pieces that got texted.
And I gather this was kosher at the time.
Well, yeah. He never met a tune he didn't like. I mean, especially or tunes that he liked, he found a way to use. And the audience would recognize, I think, a piece like, in Messiah, and with his stripes we are healed.
Mm-hmm.
That is the same kind of piece. I don't know that it had a keyboard piece as its ancestor, but it clearly was written without regard for text underlay. That is, the music existed as an abstract whole, and then the words were added later in kind of willy-nilly.
This is about a 40-minute or so piece, so there's a lot that goes on here.
Right.
I think we wanted to do at least a little bit of another one of the choruses. This one, there are soloists involved.
It's optional. The whole piece can be performed chorally, and that's the way it was done at Westminster Abbey. But the editors, and I took their suggestion, suggested that you can use soloists for some of the passages. So there are, like, there's an extensive duo or duet coming that leads in, and then the chorus sort of responds with a repeat of that same material. So it gives it some textural variety. And it's not just purely a choral piece all the way through, though we could have done it that way. But
We're talking about the concert coming up Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock by the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana with a couple of large Handel anthems, as defined, as Ted always just did, at McKinley Presbyterian Church on South 5th Street in Champaign. And here's towards the end of that anthem, The Ways of Zion Do Mourn, also known as the funeral anthem for Queen Caroline. Mm-hmm. This is called The People Will Tell. What will they tell?
I don't know.
The people will tell of their wisdom. Is that not the part we were going to do?
We were going to do Their Bodies Are Buried in Peace.
Oh, we were going to do that's in fact what I have queued up, as a matter of fact.
All right, great.
Their bodies are buried in peace. That's the half the text. The other half is, but their name liveth evermore. This is from Ecclesiastes. We're listening to a recording by the Monteverdi Choir and Orchestra conducted by John Elliott Gardner.
Thank you.
And that's about the first half of that portion of George Frideric Handel's anthem, The Ways of Zion Do Mourn, a funeral anthem for Queen Caroline, the wife of King George II of England, and a performance here by the Monteverdi Choir and Orchestra, led by John Elliott Gardner. The Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana, which consists of chorus and orchestra and soloists, will perform the entire anthem Sunday afternoon at McKinley Presbyterian Church in Champaign. The conductor will be, of course, its music director, Chester Always, who's my guest this portion of Live and Local today. Our broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, breathing life into the history of our nation's musical past through exhibits, guided tours, and performances at the University of Illinois. More information is available, and visits can be scheduled at 217-333-4577. So that occupies the entire first half.
Yep.
And then you start the second half with an instrumental piece that will be familiar to many. It's called The Entrance of the Queen of Sheba.
Perhaps one of the more well-known Handel tunes.
Yeah. Which we're not going to play today.
Right. No, it's no reason.
For that same reason.
Exactly.
One of the more. And then there are these Chandos anthems, which you made reference to at the beginning. The Duke of Chandos.
Mm-hmm.
Who was he, and why
His
did
name
he
was James
anthems?
Bridges, and he was sort of what I guess today you would call the Chancellor of the Exchequer. He was the guy that kept the books for the country, and he made a good deal of money, obviously, out of that. I'm sure quite legitimately so.
I'm sure.
Yeah, well, yeah.
As they always do.
Yeah, and he had an estate that was at the time on the outskirts of the city of London. Now it's part of London proper, called Cannons, like the bath towels with an S. And Handel, who, if nothing else, knew how to find people with money who could support his work and ingratiate himself, wound up having a residence for almost 2 years at the Duke of Chandos' home estate, Cannons, where they had a small chapel, and he wrote these 10, 11 anthems. There's some question as to how many of them were actually written at Chandos for this rather small band and choir that the Duke had there. I mean, many of these pieces are written for three-part chorus, STB, and then basically a trio, you know, oboe and two violins, so two top voices and the continuo part. We're doing one of the ones that has four parts, and there are only a couple of them in the 11 that have four parts, more typically three.
So actually soprano, alto, tenor, bass.
Yes.
Otherwise, the altos would be kind of left out, and they
yes.
wouldn't be happy.
Yep.
The text for the previous anthem, of course, all came from scripture and was of the mourning variety, MOURNING. Mm-hmm. What about the text for these in general, and then this
one
specific?
This one is typical of them, because many of them are entire psalms, and this is the 68th psalm. Which is a rather bellicose text. Let God arise and smite the enemies and scatter those who are, they will all flee away. But it gives Handel a plethora of visual images to set to music, which he loves to do, as you know.
One of those God of Love psalms.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, there is no text to this portion. It's actually it's called here a sonata that opens it up.
Mm-hmm. An instrumental introduction, if you will.
Thank you. And well, we'll leave that right there, the opening instrumental music to the 11th of the 11 Chandos Anthems by George Frideric Handel. In this case, we heard the 16 orchestras, really the 16 choir, and then they added an orchestra for this performance. Harry Christopher's conducting, and Chester always will lead the forces of the Baroque artists of Champaign-Urbana in this complete anthem Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock in Champaign. He's my guest this portion of Live and Local. So a complete rendition of which psalm did you say?
68.
And there are some solos here.
Yes. This one, unlike the funeral anthem, has designated solos, one for tenor and one for soprano. And then the fifth movement, I think it is, starts with two duets that use all four solo voices, and then the chorus comes in as a kind of tutti.
And so this is it's Let God Arise, and then you said there's a certain amount of bellicosity in
yeah.
it, but a lot of drama, so it's quite
yes.
a contrast to
oh,
what
yeah.
we heard.
As I was saying to you earlier, right. the first movement, when people hear it, they will, if they know Dixit Dominus, the early Handel psalm, there are some places that are taken right from that. I mean, it's just that kind of very dramatic writing.
And the piece that we're going to hear some of the end.
Yes.
And they might
Blessed
recognize
be God.
Some of this.
Yeah, because this is probably, it's the first use I know of what people will come later to know as the Hallelujah Chorus motif. Ha-da-dum-bum, da-da-dum-dum. And it typically of Handel has a long note theme that it contrasts with.
Okay, well, we're going to hear a little bit of that and take us out with that, as
Great.
We sometimes say in the show. Chet, always,
sure.
thanks very much for joining us, as always.
My pleasure.
And the concert Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock, McKinley Presbyterian Church on South 5th Street in Champaign. For more information, the website for the Baroque Artists is simply baroqueartists.org. And once again, this time it's the 16 choir and orchestra music by Handel.
Oh.
The final music from the final Chandos Anthem by George Frideric Handel, the 16 Choir and Orchestra conducted by Harry Christophers. Chester Always will conduct the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana in a complete performance of that anthem Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at McKinley Presbyterian Church on South Fifth Street in Champaign. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our program is made possible in part by 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign. For over 25 years, 10,000 Villages has provided income to artisans in more than 30 developing countries by marketing their handicrafts and telling their stories in North America. My next guest is somebody that I got to know pretty well about 23 years ago. He is emeritus professor at University of Illinois, former conductor of the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra, and was my conducting professor when I was in the master's conducting program here at the University of Illinois. His name, Paul Vermeil, and he is back to conduct a performance, well, several performances of Offenbach's operetta Orpheus in the Underworld, which opens tomorrow at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana, continues Friday and Saturday with 7:30 performances, and then there's a Sunday matinee in conflict, unfortunately, with the Baroque Artist Concert, but you've got other opportunities to see the operetta. That'll be Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Paul, thanks very much for coming in.
My pleasure. Nice to see you.
And how did the university coax you back to do this particular operetta?
Well, Nathan Gunn, when you remember who did baritone, who is now in charge of the opera department at the university. Of course, I've known him for many years, although we'd never worked together, but I've known him for many years, and he just thought of inviting me to conduct it, to come back and do the office. By the way, it's not really an operetta, although it is like an operetta, but it's called opera bouffe, which is the French expression for this kind of entertainment.
Well, what is this kind of entertainment?
Well, it is a lighthearted, irreverent version of the old legend of Orpheus and Eurydice, and it's a very charming, very funny. It is in English translation by Jeremy Sams, is his name. Very good translation, very funny, very clever, and singable. And so we're having a great time with it.
I would have expected that with a French conductor, they'd be singing it in French.
Yes, but they thought about it. They thought of doing it in French with English dialogue. And after I studied the score, I realized how impossible, how difficult it was for English-speaking students to articulate the French quickly, clearly. And the way Offenbach wrote the French is very awkward. It's not natural conversation style. It's very, very eclectic, very fancy, very original, very different, and very difficult to grasp. I just thought it would be absolutely impossible for English students to do this. So we decided to do it in English with a very good translation. And so that's how it all happened.
And it's always important that if you're going to do it in English, it better be translated well.
Absolutely, especially, you know, like all comedies, it's best understood in the language of the audience. You know.
One of the portions that people generally know referenced connected to Orpheus in the Underworld is the overture, but that was added later, and you're actually not doing the famous overture.
It was it was composed later, orchestrated for a full orchestra, and it's kind of a real honest to goodness overture. We've decided to do the original. The first version, which is a more or less like a chamber chamber orchestra, with a reduced, slightly reduced, and it's much nicer. It's much, much nicer.
So it begins like this. Well, apologies for the abrupt ending. I forgot that my CD did that. That's the prelude to Orpheus and In the Underworld by Jacques Offenbach, a performance here by the English National Opera Orchestra conducted by Mark Elder from their, I believe, complete performance of that. And it'll open tomorrow night at the Krannert Center in Urbana, starting at 7:30. My guest is Paul Vermeil, who is conductor of the proceedings there. I have, of course, I did my research, as one must, on Wikipedia. And one of the most interesting thing about what I found there is somebody's review back at the time, a couple of guys said that it was a coarse and grotesque parody full of vulgar and indecent scenes that give off an unhealthy odor.
Well, I don't agree. I think it is irreverent. It's true, and quite maybe a little bit risque in place, but it's not what he says, and I think it's very charming, very funny. And I think the audience will have a great time.
And then here was somebody else who was also contemporary who said that it was a jewel that only snobs will fail to appreciate. So you go along with that one.
Well,
I
agree that it is a jewel, but yeah. I don't think only the snob. I think everybody will enjoy it.
only snobs would fail to appreciate.
Oh, would fail to.
Yeah.
Oh.
So why would it have been considered to be sort of vulgar at the time? It was a political comment, wasn't it? In its day.
I'm not sure about that. I think it's just a transformation somehow, a modernization and cleaning up of the how should I say it? It's just the story made more funny. It's like making funny of a synopsis, if you want. But this it's irreverent because the gods are the gods in semi-gods revolt against Jupiter's the fact that he is a ladies' man, you know, and has lots of conquests and stuff, and is very much involved in trying to lure Eurydice. On the other hand, Pluto, who is from the ruler of the underworld, wants Eurydice also, and traps her into the underworld, and she that's the beautiful aria which I wish you had it, where she says that the underworld is really not so nice at all. It's not painful at all. It's rather enjoyable, and she has great fun there because she hates Orpheus at the very beginning. She just hates. He happens to be a violin teacher.
And is that why she hates him?
Well, she hates his violin, she hates his composition, and they just can't stand each other. So, of course, it's resolved at the end, you know, as it should.
But so that's, I mean, immediately the original story just stood on its head because, of course, they're madly in love with each other in the original myth.
Right, yeah. He is actually shattered by thundercloud. There is a personage called the public opinion, which is very important through the entire story, and public opinion tells Orpheus that he should not look back, to Eurydice when they walk out, the whole story, and there is a thundercloud, big noise, and he's shaken, he's surprised, and he turns around, and looks at her, which is not really the reason why originally he did that. So, but anyway, everything ends. Ends very well.
And we'll get to a little bit more about the ending coming up. We do have we don't happen to have a recording of this complete opera here, which is why we're having an issue with coming up with some of the tunes we wanted. But I do have here one of Eurydice's arias, and I guess I'll just play it, and then you can tell us afterwards how this fits into the picture, if that's okay. So that's Eurydice from early in the opera, Orpheus in the Underworld, in which she is, Paul Vermeil, who's conducting the proceedings, said, she actually hates Orpheus, which is not how the usual story goes. Instead, she is quite in love with this shepherd, who it turns out is not a shepherd, but is Pluto, the god of the underworld.
Right. Yeah. There is a lot of disguises in this opera. Jupiter disguises in a flea in order to sneak into the the opening of a door,
the keyhole.
Yes, so that's the only way he can get in to seduce Eurydice. So he's transformed in flea. Pluto is transformed. As Arisius, later on, he takes his costume off and reveals himself as the master of the Hades, of the hell.
And he, meaning Pluto, eventually convinces all the gods who are quite bored on Mount Olympus that hell's not such a bad place.
That's right. And they're delighted. There's a big chorus. When Jupiter tells him that they're all invited to go with him to go to hell, he says, this is a great party. And they say the gods throw terrible parties, but at least we'll have fun in hell.
And Jupiter throws the worst of the parties, and I guess is a very boring dancer or something to that effect.
Right. Well, yeah, he dances the minuet. because it's the only thing that he knows how to dance. And everybody comments about that, that he's a terrible dancer. And they are bored with everything. They are bored with dances. They are bored with ambrosia. They are bored with nectar. They are just having an awful time, so they can hardly wait to get to hell and have fun.
Some of the idea of how this really is sort of a series of silly proceedings. We have here the revolt or revolutionary chorus.
Right,
what's this about? Where does this
well,
come
it's the gods, story? The gods and demigods. Just think about the fact that they are just bored to tears.
So that's what we're talking about then.
Yes, that's a revolt against Jupiter.
Another wildcat strike, a revolution of the gods. I'm in luck, this is what I like.
Ambrosia gives us indigestion.
Nectar is wild.
It has no kick, it makes me sick.
Yes, makes us sick.
Must all our diet be treacle thick?
That is the question.
Quite right, of course ambrosia nauseates you. But read, my friends, the menu that in Hades awaits you.
You heard a little Marseillaise there in the background. There is a quote from the original Orpheus of Gluck, the famous tune, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, I have lost my Eurydice. There is background music. There is a little Bach, which we put the opening of the third Brandenburg. There is background. And somebody's complaining, he's complaining about hearing Bach again. I can't stand this Bach and Bach, Bach, and all the time, often Bach. there is a quote from, what else is there? There are a few things. These are the two main quotes from Gluck's Orpheus and Bach.
And this is Offenbach's
and this is Offenbach.
Orpheus in the Underworld, which the Lyric Theater program at University of Illinois, formerly known as the Opera Program, is presenting Thursday through Sunday this week. Paul Vermeil's my guest. He is conducting the opera.
The Opera Bouffe.
Opera Bouffe. Funny opera. I mean, that's more or less what that means, right? Or farcical.
Yes, exactly. Good word. Yes.
There is an extremely famous tune from this that shows up, I guess, near the end, although it also makes appearances here and there, that got to be called The Can-Can. How do all things lead up to this?
I think everybody is finally is having fun being liberated, you know, and it's just final rejoicing that everything ends well, you know,
and everybody's happy in hell.
Everybody's happy in hell, yeah,
more or less. This, as I said, we don't have recording here, and I actually had some trouble finding one. Does this suggest that for some reason this is not terribly often performed or simply not terribly often recorded?
I don't think so. There are a couple of recordings. There's this one. There is a very good one conducted by Mark Minkowski with the Lyon Orchestra. And Natalie Dessay, by the way, is Eurydice. She's absolutely fantastic.
I have so this no is doubt.
This is a very good recording.
How much opera have you done yourself?
Quite a bit, maybe. I don't know, six, maybe. Aliurvai. So I was very fortunate that my colleague in the orchestra department, it was Tunu Kalam, was interested in doing orchestral symphonic repertoire, and I was very much interested in doing opera. So one day he came to me and said, hey, why don't we try to make an exchange? So every year we made an exchange. So I had the opportunity to do like Manon, Faust, Carmen, Rick's Progress, and Elixir of Love, Fledermaus, many. And most of them were actually with Jerry Hadley. You remember the wonderful tenor who died a few years ago, about 3 years ago or so. It was his debut in the opera world, and he was absolutely wonderful tenor, nice guy, great actor. Also, we had wonderful other singers like Iri Mills, the soprano, who made a great career. The bass, what is Halverson's?
Eric Halverson,
who is doing a lot of singing in Germany, doing all Wagner operas, and this was really the golden era of the Eurovay opera department. This was, I was very much privileged and honored to be part of it, and happy. And it just so that's why I'm so happy to be back.
Well, now you're helping to kick off the next phase of the U of I Opera, which is Lyric Theater at Illinois, and it's Orpheus in the Underworld.
Nathan Gunn.
Under Nathan Gunn's direction.
Yes, yes.
A pretty darn good singer himself.
Wonderful. We just did his Figaro in the Bob of Seville in Chicago.
Oh, yes.
It was a great success.
Yeah.
He's a wonderful singer, great actor, charming personality.
And also on faculty at the University of Illinois.
On the faculty, right.
Thursday through Saturday, 7:30, and then Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, Offenbach's Orpheus in the Underworld, Paul Vermeil conducting. Dawn Harris is the director. In fact, Dawn will be here next week with another show she's directing for Sinfonietta Camera, which is The Mikado, also a rather absurd set of proceedings. And Paul, it's a pleasure to have you in the studio and great to see you again. Thanks for coming.
It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure to be here and to see you again.
Our programs today are made possible with the support of the Friends of WILL and in part by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council, an agency of the state of Illinois. This is 90.9 WILL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. We're a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois.